Welcome to another Confluence podcast. I'm Randall Stevens, and as usual, I've got Evan Troxell co-hosting with me today, and our guest is Rob Sinclair from a civil engineering firm called Wade Trim. Welcome, Rob.
Thanks, Randall. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. I'll tee this up just a little bit, and we'll dive in kind of as usual. I got introduced to Rob through a mutual friend of ours, Paul Aubin, who a lot of people know, the world famous Paul Aubin.
He'd been on the show before.
Yeah, he'd been on, and it seems like because of his work in the training side, you know, everybody knows Paul. So, but it was a great introduction, and Rob was actually able, Evan participated in our live event, in a Confluence event in September. So he was down. So we'll dive into a little bit of that. But, you know, this year's theme was an extension of our discussion because it's so hot about AI and what's going on that front. And Rob, you know, has been leading the charge at Wade Trim to kind of wrap your arms around, wrap your head around, you know, what is all of this? What's the impact? And what should we be thinking about, and what should we be doing first? And before I'll turn it over to you, Rob, just to give a little bit more background, also a friend of the podcast are Mehdi and Sam from Yegatech. And I know you guys have engaged, and they've been helping you all. So maybe we can dive into just how you're thinking about all of this, how the firm has, you know, what framework have you put in place to start thinking these things through? And let's just dive in.
Yeah. Thanks again, Randall, for having me on. Hi, everyone. Rob Sinclair with Wade Trim. I'm our corporate technology lead, and most recently became our advanced design technology practice lead. I'm based out of our Pittsburgh office, but we have 22 offices and 800 employees across primarily the Northeast, some offices in Florida and Texas as well. But Wade Trim is a full service civil engineering firm. Unlike Paul Aubin, who's a architectural focused, I'm more on the civil side. So definitely awesome to be a part of this. So thank you.
Great. So, if memory serves me, you know, you're maybe 2 years in tenure at Wade Trim.
Yeah. A year and a half with Wade Trim. I have about 25 years experience, in civil engineering.
So, I guess first question would be, you know, when you went to Wade Trim, was part of this new, kind of world, that we're going to talk about here around AI and advancements in the technology, part of either why you were attracted to go there or why they were attracted to bring you in? Can you kind of give a little?
Yeah, that's ironic that you bring that up, because AI was not even on the radar when I was considering joining Wade Trim. You know, they originally hired me as the corporate technology lead to come in and, you know, lead the initiative around all the Autodesk products, reality capture, drone technologies, and standards. You know, I'm co-chair on our formal standards committee. So that was the primary reason for my hire. Then quickly, within 30 days, they're like, hey, this AI thing, we want to make sure we stay on the forefront of this. Can you lead this for us? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. I love new technology, love new things. And, you know, really just, throughout my career, I've just kind of grabbed a hold of these new things and kind of ran with it and helped implement new technologies within the companies that I work for.
So how did you go about thinking about how to go about that? What was the framework? What were the decisions that you were making?
Yeah. So how it all started, ironically, our CEO, Andy McCune, read a book by the name of Augment It, which Mehdi from Yegatech was the author of that book. So we quickly reached out to them and said, hey, you know, we're starting our AI journey. What do you have to offer? What services do you provide? And we started that partnership with Yegatech. We then hired and contracted with Yegatech to come in and develop our AI strategy, AI policy, help us with our governance. You know, we've been working with them ever since, and actually just renewed our engagement with them through the end of 2025. So the partnership's been great working with Yegatech. And, you know, the thing that was really important for us is we had buy-in from our executive board from day one. I know a lot of companies struggle with that, but we got that buy-in all the way from the top of our company, which makes a huge difference.
So I assume that translates into resources ultimately.
Yeah. Resources. We quickly established an AI task force. So there's 30 people that are a part of that task force. It represents all of our market segments, all of our business units. I lead our AI task force. It's not any of our full-time jobs. You know, it's kind of our part-time job, so to speak. But you know, we've been meeting once a month with our task force, talking about things that are going on around AI, what we're doing around AI at Wade Trim. And we also, that things that kind of stemmed out of that is we offer AI town halls to all of our 800 employees. So, you know, we use that to kind of educate our staff on what the task force has been doing kind of behind the scenes. And we also use that as an educational opportunity to teach our staff, like, you know, what is Copilot? How to use Copilot? The OpenAI platforms, you know, things like Adobe Firefly. So all that kind of stuff. We use that task force meeting to do.
It sounds, Rob, like you guys, because you did the work with Yegatech early and you established the governance and things like that, that then enables you to do the town halls that you're talking about, right? Because then you have a really clear, I don't know, you know, boundaries, maybe not the right word, but you definitely have this framework that you can then allow those employees to operate within with clarity, right? Like, it's not just like the Wild West, go try and do and use and like install and do, you know, there's all these things that people may be doing under the radar, even in many firms, because there isn't that clarity coming from the company. Right. So, yeah. I mean, just to do that up front just seems like it just has enabled you to really push this out in a much better way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely helps to have that structure in place. You know, people know if there's something new that they want to bring to the table, they know who to reach out to kind of vet that solution and put it through its paces. But you'll still have people behind the scenes doing the wild, wild west stuff and doing things on their own. I don't think you'll ever solve that, but, which is good. We want people to experiment. The biggest thing is like, in our AI policy, the root of our AI policy is to protect our proprietary data and our clients' proprietary data. And as long as our staff is responsible using those new things and keeping our policy in mind, then it's okay. You know, it's okay to experiment and do new things. That's how innovation happens. You know, that's great.
Usually unplanned, right? It's where the magic happens, right?
Yeah.
For the 30 people, were they volunteered or voluntold to be on this committee? How'd y'all approach that?
Yeah, a lot of them volunteered. Ironically, we had, once the word started getting out, you know, people were coming out of the woodwork wanting to be a part of this, but we were already at kind of over capacity. You know, 30 is a lot of people to have on a task force. It, you know, maybe the sweet spot is 18 or so. But 30 is definitely a lot. And, you know, we're looking at maybe scaling that back a little bit, evaluating all the members on that task force. You know, if they're just there to kind of listen in and get information rather than giving back to the task force, maybe they could just listen into the AI town hall and not really participate in the task force. So we're going to be reevaluating that in 2025. This is a new thing for us at Wade Trim, and our industry. You know, it's only been around maybe a year and a half, pretty prevalent for a year and a half. But AI has been around since the 1950s. A lot of people don't know that.
And just because you mentioned it, you all do an internal podcast, company podcast too, right?
But we do.
Is it public? Is it?
Yeah.
Didn't you share a QR code?
I did. Yeah.
Maybe Evan, we can end up putting in the show notes if Rob's got it. We can share. But that's
yeah. I'll be happy to share that with you. It's called the Wade Trim Innovation Alley Podcast. It's on YouTube and all the podcast channels, but YouTube has video. And we have one specific episode all around AI.
Yeah, that's nice. Great. Yeah, the biggest challenge, I think with a lot of this is even when you come up with, which we can try to dive into where you are seeing some success around your experiments, but ending up, how do you communicate this back with the extended team? 800 people is a lot of people to get to, stop, listen, and then, ultimately, hopefully take advantage or do. So those are always big challenges. Any tips you can drop on anybody for how to effectively do that in their operation?
Communicate, communicate, communicate. Yeah. I find that you can't over communicate things. You feel like you're a broken record sometimes, but there's always people that haven't heard the message yet. So we do, emails and town halls and various communication methods, and it never fails. People still don't get the message.
You travel a lot too. You told us this morning you're one of your 22 offices, right? So it's
I'm in Taylor, Michigan office, but I'm based out of Pittsburgh.
I think that's common, with a lot of Avail's customers, the ones that are large multi office. It's the leaders who end up going to the sites and visiting those teams frequently, and that communication process just can't be beat. It's like you can put all you want in emails and stuff, but nothing beats.
I think a good communication mechanism would be presenting at a distillery like I did at your conference. That was pretty awesome. Yeah. Never did that before, but
it's a secret, Rob.
Gotcha. Yeah. Sorry.
It really is though. It's like it's the timing and the medium and the person, right? It just because you consume information in a certain way, it like most other people will consume it a different way, their way, right? And so it's like that it has to be the right medium at the right time for that person. And that is so hard in these large corporate environments, right? Like you said, like people still won't hear it, even if you've sent it out five different times. And with new initiatives, people don't have time for new stuff. They're busy doing the stuff they've already got, right? So it is really hard to kind of keep, for the people delivering the message, to keep beating that drum over and over and over. And it's stale information for them, but it's brand new for somebody else who hasn't heard it yet. And that is a difficult challenge in large corporate environments.
It is, because, culture in the AEC industry, you get people that are stuck in their ways. They've been doing their job the same way for 25 years and they don't want change. They don't like change. Some people love change. They embrace it, but you always have that small percentage that don't want change. And, this is something that AI is going to force a lot of our workforce to do in the AEC industry is change. We tell people all the time that, AI is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. So, our slogan is, AI, AI might not take your job, but somebody using AI will. So, embrace that.
That was one of the things I wrote down from one of your slides. That's a good one to get the point across. Humans won't be replaced by AI. They'll be replaced by humans using AI.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I would agree. And I may have mentioned this on one of the previous podcasts, but there's a guy that I was acquainted with kind of casually through academia. And he is he's on LinkedIn all the time, very pessimistic about, I kind of get the, there's, everybody's going to be, I'll give it 6 more months before it's AI bingo. It's nobody wants to hear the word AI again, but I think we're all far enough into it to have glimpses of there's gold in those hills. And it's trying to, we're at the natural, I think, of a large technology revolution. The nature is to not know what to do with it yet, especially when you get a powerful new tool, we're kind of talking about here. And, everybody just has to understand what has to happen are a million experiments. And out of those million experiments, some of them are going to be crazy. 99% of them may be crazy, but there's going to be some things. I know I'm seeing it come out of some of the work that we're doing here. It's it is real.
Yeah. And what I would encourage everybody, if you're starting down your journey around AI, it's okay to fail. You're going to fail. But just keep chugging along, and you'll find successes in there. So that's very important.
Rob, some of what you all framework, you know, kind of put in place at Wade Trim, you know, can you kind of give us a breakdown? Like, you know, as you began the journey with your team, what kind of process did you all go through ideation wise on the front end? And then ultimately, how did you narrow down where you all were going to put your focus? And then we can talk about whether you've seen any positive results come out of these.
Yeah. So, you know, all of our AI initiatives fall under our OAT, our Office of Applied Technologies. So that's our board of directors for all things technology. And that was really one of the selling points for me choosing to leave my old company to come to Wade Trim, is they had this great structure that promoted innovation. And, you know, it's really awesome the way they have this set up. So within that is all of our AI initiatives. And, you know, we partnered with Yegatech to come in, and we had an all-day meeting with our top 50, like, senior project managers, executives, market segment leads. And we sat in a conference room and did this workshop for 8 hours. And half of those people reached out to me prior to that meeting saying, do I really need to be here? What is this all about? They had a lot of skepticism and fear around AI. And after that meeting, their tune totally changed. They're like, we get it now. We're fully supportive of this. And we came up during that workshop with 24 ideas that we can develop or implement or purchase that can help Wade Trim move forward. So within those 24 ideas, we then started the prioritization phase and said, what are the top three that we want to focus on to implement? So we got those top three, and those are what we're working on now. And, you know, all three of those are pretty far along. We got kind of phase one of all three of those ideas implemented now, and our goal is to have those kind of fully implemented in 2025, knowing that they're always going to be a work in progress, continuous improvement. So, you know, we also looked at the other 20 some ideas and said, all right, which one of these are kind of quick win that we could get done in a short amount of time and get these implemented? So we've done a few of those as well. So yeah, that all day workshop was a really good way to kind of propel us to that next level.
Can you share any specific ones that you've?
Sure.
You know, yeah. And also, you know, I think equally valuable are the ones that you've maybe tried and, you know, it's not ready for prime time yet, or, you know, this needs to go on the back burner for a while.
Yeah. So one of those three initiatives is a enterprise level chatbot or agent, you know, whatever you want to call it today. I know everybody changes those terms all the time. And, you know, that we don't have that fully developed yet. You know, we have bits and pieces of it developed. We have a chatbot for CAD standards. Our finance group has a chatbot, but we want an all-encompassing chatbot. You know, our employees go to one application, essentially, ask it a question. It does all the prompts and access the large language models behind the scenes, and then provides that output back to the user. So that's still a work in progress. That's one of them. The other one is
Did you all build that out yourself, or did you find a third party that had a product that you used? Or
yeah, so we're using OpenAI ChatGPT 4.0 right now, but we're also keeping in mind that Copilot Studio is evolving. All of these solutions are evolving. One of the chatbots that we developed, it was an in-house development. So we had an AI intern from Carnegie Mellon University that he is pursuing a master's in AI and civil engineering, one of the first graduates of this program. When it started, I think Carnegie Mellon and MIT were the first two schools to have this program. And good news is his name's Kevin. He's joining us full time on January 6th. So he wrote a custom chatbot that we actually presented last week at the Florida Water Conference on could AI pass the PE exam? Mm-hmm. And short answer is yes, with 74% accuracy. And it was cool.
What's
because
passing?
We
70?
70, 70 is yes. passing, yeah.
Okay.
So we presented last week, and we actually won an award for the best paper of the conference with our chaplain, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Sounds like you found a unicorn there with Kevin too, right?
Yeah,
like
he's
it's like the perfect mashup for what you're looking for.
A note to students, right? Specialize, and if your timing is right, it's like you'll be in high demand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you say you're using OpenAI's system, did you build your own custom GPT then? Or how are you implementing that? Because like anybody could sign up for an account with ChatGPT, right? But it sounds like there's some special.
Yeah.
And then what would the data to train that, right? That you wrote.
Yeah. There? Yeah. So, so custom GPT with the OpenAI on the back end. And then the training data was just the PE study guide, essentially. Yeah. So just
the RAG, it's RAG, retrieval augmented generation. So you're ingesting that and then, yeah.
Yeah. And we were doing a bunch of testing on, you know, ChatGPT 3 wasn't working. We were getting like 5 to 11%. So we developed our own chatbot because we wanted to be able to upload text and images. And up until recently, when GPT-4 came out or 4.0 came out, you could not use both at the same time. So we redid the exam and the testing on the new OpenAI model, and it also did pass. But this was maybe 4, 5, 6 months ago. We had to create our own chatbot in order to get it to pass using the graphics and the text that are a part of the typical PE exam.
And so was that just a test that you guys developed to like basically convince yourselves that it was a internally like a useful thing that you could then take what you learned from this and apply it in new ways? Because I can't imagine maybe you have employees who are actually maybe using that to study for their engineering exam, but like tell us how you see this like working its way into other useful tools.
Yeah. Yeah. We went down this path just wondering, hey, can this thing pass the PE exam? So we started just doing some testing and come to find out that it could. And it's like, oh, this is pretty awesome. And, you know, so yeah, it did help to evolve like our research and our roadmap on where we want to take this. But the one thing that we kind of drove home throughout this process and in the presentation last week is, you know, this could produce really convincing answers that appear to be correct, but they're not. So you always have to have that human in the loop to check and QA the response or the data coming from whatever AI solution it is. So you still have to have the fundamental knowledge, engineering knowledge or whatever it is to check the data coming out of this.
Yeah, I'm having similar experiences. I'm using, you know, lots of these tools to just do like business planning. I'm working on, you know, 2025 pro formas and some, you know, financials and what ifs and all those kinds of things. And it's really impressive. You can, you know, begin to feed, you know, a lot of this kind of information in and then query it, ask questions. But, you know, part of the competence, you know, and some of it is, you'll immediately see things that you know are not right. And then, but if you didn't know that, you could go cascading build on bad information. But, you know, like I had information in a spreadsheet that represented 1 year instead of 3 years. Well, you have to then say, okay, that's the wrong answer because of this, feed that back into the loop and then validate that you're getting the right thing. And then you could get to build, but without that knowledge, right? Because I'd done basically all of it in my own spreadsheets and all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to go experiment, see how well this is. But it's like very quickly, you've got a sparring partner, right? That you could be doing very quick what ifs. I think it's back to what you said. It's like, it's not going to replace what I do and what I think, but it's going to make what I do and my thinking faster. And which means, okay, I either didn't have somebody to spar with today. I can now still, you know, kind of get this quick feedback loop and help me in my thinking. But you better, I think the lesson there is you better know your stuff if it's really important, especially like numbers,
right,
and financials. You know,
I find it really beneficial to get your thoughts together, you know, to help with a general outline, then you could kind of revamp it, you know, like you mentioned, Randall, just getting your thinking together. One fear that I have is with the younger generation that are coming into our industry, you know, they are more adept to using these types of tools and technologies, and they might rely on it too much, and it might become second nature where they trust it too much and not check and verify the answers or the results. Yeah, I hate to say maybe it's going to make our industry dumber because they're relying on these tools too much, but you know, I think it's our jobs and our responsibilities to educate the younger generation on, hey, these are great tools, but we still need to do our jobs and check our work.
Yeah, it's really some of the first when the LLMs, you know, kind of popped on the scene. You know, some of the first stuff that we started experimenting with was just to, even from a, you know, help to write a blog post or something. But it's like I saw very quickly because other people in the operation were like generating some of the stuff. And it's like I'd read through there and be like, I don't even know what the hell this means. Like, you know, it's I think you said it well, Rob, which is, It'll sound and look impressive on the surface. And for somebody that doesn't have the domain expertise, it's just a bunch of words. I'm no different than talking to a human, right, about any of this kind of stuff. That's like, okay, I can smile and nod my head and act like I understand what you're saying. But it's like, do you totally really understand what I'm saying? And, but, you know, it's going to cut both ways. You will show your weaknesses really quick when you put stuff out there that is not, doesn't spell right, because there will be somebody that will read that, see that, question that, and go, what is that? That is not right. And that is strange. Did you even read this? Did you understand what the output was? But I think that's like it's the 80-20 rule. 80% of it's like pretty good. I think it is really good for structuring your thoughts and at least helping you spar. That's the way I think about it. It's like, okay, I need a sparring partner on this, and then I'll go tweak it and make it my own, right, from there.
Yeah. I think the advanced voice mode of ChatGPT is an excellent sparring partner, to put it in those terms, Randall. I don't know if you've been playing with it. But
did we talk about it on the last podcast? Because you were telling me that you did like a long car drive.
I had like an hour-long car drive, and I was working on ideas, and it kept coming back with fresh things to think about and consider. And in that way, it's very bidirectional, not just me asking it things and it spitting back answers and me, you know, correcting it and spitting. No, it's just, it'll ask you questions it prompts you to come up with some information. And that is really an excellent sparring partner. And something that came up in a recent podcast on my other podcast, on the Troxel podcast, was using tools like these for like psychology, like therapy kind of stuff, where people may not be willing to ask questions to another human being because of privacy and you know, just not putting certain things out there, but they would maybe be more willing to do it with a tool like this because of the private, at least as far as we know, maybe private nature of that, right? Who knows where that information is actually going, but having those kinds of conversations can help you work through things, or even role play things before you actually do them with a real person, to just get a taste of what that interaction could be like, or maybe things you need to think about and augment your argument or, you know, your presentation, whatever that may be, to, you know, like you said, like a sparring partner. I think it kind of is a interesting direction that we're heading in that regard.
Yeah, I like that analogy, the sparring partner. Never thought of it in those terms before, but that's good. And
well, you got to push back sometimes, right? It's like,
okay.
But I think, you know, to your point, Evan, it's like, you know, really what it's doing is just getting your synapses to fire in some different directions. Ultimately, it's
absolutely,
it is just it's prompting you.
Yep.
And as opposed to the other way around. And, you know, there's going to be some value in there. I think everybody's got to figure out on their own, you know, where and how that fits. I was going to ask Rob, like, with with the chatbots that you all have deployed, one, has it been deployed far and wide? And if so, how much usage is it? What's the frequency of usage? You know, how much is, are people playing with it still? Or are they actually, you think, finding that this is a good resource?
Yeah. So yeah, we've gotten a lot of good feedback. You know, one of the ones that is deployed on our internal intranet site that we call the hub is, the CAT standards chatbot. But I want to build on top of that where we could look at the usage, the analytics, like what are people prompting against this so that we can look at that data and make it better over time. Haven't got there yet, but that's on the roadmap for 2025 to build that next layer on top of that.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I think with, you know, like anything, it requires maintenance and it requires to be fed. The information gets, you know, there's some time decay of the value of some of the information, and you have to figure out like, okay, how do I prune out things that are no longer valid, you know, versus adding new information into the system. And you know, we've been in, obviously with Avail, our work in the content management side, it's like always our counsel to people that come to us and is like, there is no magic button. It's like, there's still some work that has to be done to make sure that the information that's going in is the right information that you're trying to, you know, amplify and get out the other end. But, you know, it does require some maintenance. We're doing similar with our latest release of our software. We put our knowledge base on the software side into a new help bot. But there was, you know, over the last 3-4 months, there had been a lot of work on testing it, sampling it, asking questions, looking at when it gave the wrong answer and being like, well, do we need to go back and put in better information? Which meant now you got this long list of things that you need to go curate, plug holes in. But in the end, it's like, wow, it's actually pretty good. Probably more than 80%. It's probably 90-some%. But you're probably constantly looking for the little, oh, that's not quite right. Or that's not the way I would have answered. Mm-hmm. I could have short, you know, knowing maybe a better answer, I could have like got straight to the point. But I think it's I think it is this like continual then loop of like fill in the gap. Elevate that so that the bot knows about it. And then when there's things that are in that information that are just dead wrong, how do you purge that out of the system? And probably no different than construction. You know, it kind of, you know, I've heard these stories over the years about problems that end up in designs that end up in construction, and then they know about it and then they can't get it back out of the system.
Right.
It's like that information lives down in here and it's in all these nooks and crannies and it somehow is keeps popping its head. And it's like, really hard to squish those things out. It's probably analogous to what's going to have to happen with these kind of chatbots and AI, you know, LLMs. Yeah.
Rob, I have a question for you about that rollout. So are your 30 AI task force people using these tools, or has it been rolled out to everybody? And I'm just curious kind of about how you manage or enable people to have accounts with these tools. Like, is that just something that the company decided to release to certain individuals or the whole company, or how's that working?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Evan. So like the Waitrim chatbot around CAD standards, that is available to the entire company. We provide open AI licenses to just the AI task force. We also provide Microsoft Copilot 365 licenses to the task force and select others, but we are looking to ramp that number up. We're looking to add maybe another 200 licenses next year. It's expensive. I mean, if you're talking $30 per user per month of a company of 800, if we gave it to everyone, you know, that's $240K a year just for the license fee. So we're looking at alternatives, developing our own, you know, figuring out other solutions so that we don't have to incur that license cost for all 800 users.
How do you think about that, though, in terms of, I mean, okay, let's say it's $240,000. What's everybody's billable rate and how many hours is that? And then how many hours would you save by potentially, you know, using tools like these? It seems like the math probably works out in
It
a
does,
fairly
yeah.
short
It
order.
does, yeah. We did all the ROI calculations, and the $240K investment would save about $1.3 million a year. So, the ROI is there for sure. But usually, like our rule of thumb and my rule of thumb is you got to prove at least 10x ROI to implement something, and we're only maybe at 4 or 5x right now.
Only 5x,
I know, which is still awesome, but I think we're going to get there next year. It just right now it's a little too early for us.
I mean, part of it is like you have to invest in, like you are doing with your town square or your meetings, right? That you're presenting this stuff out there is you're getting everybody more and more comfortable with the tools that are out there. I'm hoping you're teaching them like how to use them because the where the rubber meets the road is their actual use of and
Right.
positive results with these tools, right? It's like giving everybody Photoshop and then five people use Photoshop for real, right? Most other people don't need Photoshop, right? They only need some basic image editor that comes
Microsoft
with the
Paint.
OS. And so you can't like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense to roll it out to people who aren't going to use the thing, right? And so there is this balance that must be achieved of to actually get that ROI because if people have access to these tools and they're just curmudgeon-y about it or they don't make time for it or they're not they you know whatever the quote unquote reasons may be for justifying not using it, like when you this is the thing that happens in so many firms is they roll out these great new tools and they talk about it and talk about it and train about it and do all these things and people still don't use them, right? And so that's a really like tough line to walk when you're in a technology leadership role in a company is getting people on board to use and get positive results from these tools.
That's a good point. And we actually have the opposite of that problem where we just recently we had this widespread issue of a lot of our staff using various AI meeting note takers. And, we had people using all kinds of different ones. They would just pop up, multiple ones would pop up in meetings from Read AI, Otter AI, Copilot, And some of those are like, once you start looking into their privacy policy, like it's pretty alarming because they could sell your data. It's publicly available. There's no privacy protections. You could get into enterprise level agreements with them, but again, it's pretty hefty expense. So what we did is we basically narrowed it down to two and said anything outside of these two are prohibited from use. So had our legal team review the terms and conditions and privacy policies, and or quickly eliminated a bunch of them that we are not allowed to use anymore.
Is there a way, Rob, to actually block those? I'm trying to think of where in the layer that they sit. It's like not necessarily the network traffic, because if it's like a Zoom plugin or something, any way that you can like actually enforce that?
Our IT security team blocked the ones that we prohibited the use of. I'm not a security expert, but they were able to do that somehow.
I'm wondering if it like blocks outbound traffic to a certain server or something, right? That it might be trying.
Possibly,
One of if I remember, we've talked about your all's use of the LLMs, but I think you all were also experimenting around with some task automation and even like some image recognition and tagging of data, right, that was coming in from the field. Can you talk more about any of those kinds of experiments?
That was a project that Kevin worked on. We had 12,000 images, which is a lot to go through manually, and we needed to classify those images, manholes, inlets, other structures. And Kevin was able to write a computer vision AI to go through those and classify those and put them in folders based on what it saw. And he was able to do that with like 99.7% accuracy. So you think about a human going through 12,000 images, you're going to have some error in there too. You're going to miss things and probably classify something that shouldn't be. So, he was able to do that and had great success, being an intern for us. So
So
it
is
was
that
good.
now a tool that you all can ongoing put into production?
Yeah, it will be. Not officially right now, but it is going to be shortly.
Yeah, that's exciting. We've kind of graduated ourselves from work with started with data and then LLMs, but doing some more image tagging and those kinds of things. And you know, it's just impressive how quickly this stuff is improving. Those are like areas that I've been watching for several years because I knew, you know, in theory that it was there, but it's like not ready for prime time, not ready for prime time. And then all of a sudden it's like, man, it's just like flipping a switch. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is really good now. Yeah. And, which is, you know, if you're a technologist like us, and probably unless somebody's really bored, the people listening to this podcast are probably similar ilk of interest in this kind of stuff. It's kind of a renaissance time, right? Of just massive experiments going on and exciting time to be building technology and implementing technology.
Yeah. So, I think what's so not, like exactly what you're talking about there, Randall, is because software has gotten really complex, right? And so complex that a firm of 800 people, right? Like Wade Trim, it's like, how much more can you absorb when there's new features, there's bug fixes, you know, these are complicated professional applications that we have to use to get our jobs done. Who has time to keep up with that? And so to me, it's kind of this breath of fresh air, like, oh my gosh, like Photoshop's Firefly stuff, right? To actually learn to do all that stuff in Photoshop that Firefly can achieve with, you know, a selection and a prompt is orders of magnitude of difficulty. Like the amount of time it takes to get proficient with all of the tools in the toolbar and all the layers and all the masking modes, and there's all of that stuff. And now there's like this thing where you circle the thing and you write a prompt and it gives you some options.
I think you're it's dead on it, Evan, right? It's like a simplification of the interface, which makes it more approachable. And then, yeah, I don't want to know what every one of these little buttons, you know, some people are masochists. They want to know what every one of those little buttons do, but
right.
it really squelches the, you know, creativity of a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. And those types of things are getting easier and more kind of common. You know, our landscape in 6 months from now is going to be completely different, but you know, that reminded me, you know, Apple iOS 18.2 just came out recently that, you know, has AI within Siri that's built on ChatGPT, but then they have image correction where you can just take your finger and swipe out an area of the image that you don't want and it uses AI. It's not perfect, but the potential is there for sure. Yeah.
I saw somebody had put that up against some of the other ones that are doing that. And I mean, granted, it's just like running on your phone or your iPad, right? And you're using your finger to like paint out, okay, get rid of this person in the background. And they found it to be substantially better than the other ones that are out there. And I like say it's incredible, right? It's like that is something that is going to go out to hundreds of millions of people, give them this ability to do this thing and get pretty darn good results really quickly. That's a huge,
and that's the
huge
first level iteration of that too. So it can only go up from there.
Right.
Switch topics just for a second, Rob. You know, I said at the intro that we got introduced to Paul Aubin. You and Paul have been involved in, I'll just call it a side project, that you all do a lot of reality capture and work in Italy. Can you tell us a little bit about the project and what that initiative looks like?
Yeah. So, fortunately, like back in 2016, I got invited to be a part of this team to go to Italy, Volterra, Italy, which is in the heart of Tuscany. And the goal was to go over there and capture, using reality capture and remote sensing technologies, different historic artifacts within this ancient city. So there's things in the city that are over 3,000 years old that we went over there, and all these technology companies donated hardware and software to the efforts. You know, the mayor of Volterra welcomed us with open arms because like a lot of the history in that city are older than anywhere else on this planet. And, you know, his approach was he wanted some of this stuff to be on the UNESCO World Heritage List, where none of them are right now. You know, there's newer, like one example is an Etruscan arch that's 3,000 years old. there's a newer Etruscan arch that is on the UNESCO World Heritage List in a different city, but the one in Volterra is not. So, you know, 2016, Paul and I were kind of one of the first two team members that were invited to be a part of this effort. You know, Paul with his architecture expertise, me on the civil survey geospatial side of things. And we went over there and worked for 2 weeks in a beautiful town on top of a mountain in Tuscany, and worked our butts off capturing tons of data, processing it, and creating, you know, BIM, civil infrastructure models and meshes and like just the whole nine yards doing
and
AR,
no wine.
VR.
I'm assuming no wine. No.
Lots of wine, yeah. Lots of wine. So wine is with every meal over there. So that's a crazy thing. Like, you know, us Americans went over there in this town that was pretty laid back, and they take 2-3 hour lunches, take siesta in the afternoon, and we're there working like nonstop, you know, working all evening. And yeah, we did take breaks for lunch and dinner and drink a lot of vino. But yeah, it was great. Like, so I went back, last year was my third, or this year actually was my third time over there. So we're doing a lot of cool things. And, you know, I know you were at Autodesk University, Randall, and
yeah, I was going to say,
you stopped by the booth there.
Yeah, I did. And, Paul was showing me around, and it was great to see, you know, they had 3D printed a lot of the scans that they had taken over, and you got to kind of see, but, yeah, really interesting for those that were at AU. This year, hopefully you got a chance to see that exhibit on the floor. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And the 3D printing piece of it, you know, we captured some historic artifacts that were in museums. Obviously you don't want to touch those because if they break, you can't replace them. So scan those, 3D printed them. Students can use those now. They could touch it. If they drop it, break it, print another one. Right. So pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff for sure.
We had on the recent episode, Evan, what's,
I don't know who you're talking about. I don't know where you're going.
You can go edit this little,
yes,
edit
for
this
sure.
little piece for out, sure. But, Chapman, I've drawn a blank on her first name, that did the Vitruvius. The Scrolls project,
Is it Kristen? I can't remember.
Yeah. Kristen. I'm having like a senior Christy moment. Chapman. I'm like,
there you go.
I'm getting to that point where it's like, what? Anyway, we had recently Christy Chapman on an episode talking about, she was also one of the speakers at this past Confluence event. And anyway, it was, I told her and I wasn't blowing smoke, but it was, I keep saying those projects are just really sexy, but I think it's this, because they combine antiquities, that whole side with technology, that, you know, I think people like ourselves that are in this side of the world, right, are attracted to the, not the day-to-day things, infrastructure that's we're all working on, but this idea that you can apply and think about the use of these technologies in those kinds of realms. So it was cool having Christy on, and you know, I think very similar to what the work that you and Paul and others. I saw at the AU the list of all the people who've gone over, you know, the last few years to work on that project. A pretty extensive list of people who've gone over to help. So
yeah, and it's great because it's limited to 16 people because we stay in a residential dorm. And it can only hold 16 people. So they try to mix it up where we have 8 industry experts and 8 students. So we try to educate people from universities all around the world. So last year, this year, we had 7 countries represented within those 16 people, which is awesome. And Christy's presentation at Confluence like blew me away. That is incredible. I'm glad she ended that conference, because she presented before me. There's no way anybody could keep up with that.
She was.
No, it was really cool. Yeah. And the work, for those of you that didn't catch that podcast, it's worth going back and listening to. But the guy that she works with that's behind all that, where I'm also trying to get him to come on. We'll have him on here before long. And there's actually some really cool news that he's got to share that I got to learn about last week with him. But Yeah, just I think that I think the people that work in our industry, these are important things, right? History, it's a bringing together of all this, the application of the technology to those, you know, I'll say problems, but really just opportunities to kind of understand the past a little better and leverage that, I think is, has a lot of appeal for people in the industry. So maybe I can kind of turn that into, you know, that when we do these live Confluence events, you know, it was trying to curate the, you know, the people doing obviously the day-to-day work, but we're also trying to bring in things like those kinds of stories into that mix. But maybe Rob, you can just, you know, wax on how great, on about how great it was, the event was, and everybody that you got to meet and discuss, and, you know, and then just, you know, we're going to do a one-day event in San Francisco in April of 2025, but we're also planning our event for next October, the 3-day event that we do here in Lexington. But maybe you can just kind of reflect on, it was your first time there.
Yeah.
What your takeaways were, and you'll of course get an invite back. So hopefully you'll come.
Oh, appreciate
that. Don't worry about what, you don't have to only say nice things right now.
No. It's like, it's an open book, but it's generally people come back often. So it's like one of those things, like, and it's not always the bourbon, but that helps maybe.
Yeah. Well, you know, Randall, I'm a big bourbon guy. Definitely love coming down to Louisville, Lexington, bourbon country down there. And when I got an invite to present at Confluence and the bourbon capital of the world, I was like, yeah, why not? Let's do it. So it was great because, like, you know, it was limited to what, 50 people, that could fit on.
We're thinking about actually pushing that number up. You know, it's always this, like, you know, there's a question about, you know, what makes it special. And a lot of that is the size, right? You know, like you were saying earlier about the 30 people on the task force, maybe it should really be 18. So anytime something's working, you're always kind of reticent to muck around with it too much, but we are thinking about extending that to more people. We'll see.
Yeah. But yeah, the conference was great. I loved how you had it set up where it was at a different venue every day. And, you know, thankfully the day I had to present, it was at Log Still Distilling, got to present at a distillery, which was pretty awesome. You know, it, and everybody that attended there are experts in their own realm, learned so much from everybody there, made great connections, you know, hung out with a handful of people that I met at that conference at Autodesk University, you know, stayed in touch and just, you know, stayed connected. And even though, like, you know, we might be in different industries, architectural engineering, whatever, structural engengineering, you know, there's a lot of overlap there with all of these technologies, and just sharing that knowledge, across everybody that was at that conference was phenomenal. Everybody had brought their own strengths to the table and made, you know, lifelong connections.
Well, we've been, because of the nature of our business, we have been, you know, always have a heavy, presence of people in the architecture side. Having you come in from an engineering firm and be able to bring, you know, that perspective and that information, you know, and ultimately it's a networking event in the end. And like you said, I think the most valuable, we try to give a backdrop of an excuse to for these people to network and get to know each other. But and so what I'll challenge, you'll get an invite back to this year. And a lot of what we try to do though is leverage that network to say, hey, Rob, who's the one person that you know, right? And really give you the ability to say, you get to invite who else would be a good into this mix. In the same way that Paul, you know, who had attended a couple of times in the past, you know, suggested that you would be a good addition to the event. So we appreciate you participating, sharing, you know, all the work that you're doing at Wade Trim and the exciting things, especially around the AI initiative. We're still working on, we're probably going to break and not make 3 years in a row that the theme is quote unquote AI. So we're working on what it may be a better theme. It'll probably make its way into everything that's being talked about in some form or fashion, but I'm looking forward to seeing you again, having you participate.
Yeah, I'd love to. So honored to be a part of it, Randall.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for joining us on this podcast. And like I said, we'll put in the show notes, you know, links to your podcast that you guys have if people want to dig into, but really appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah. Thanks, Randall, and thanks, Evan. Much appreciated.
Yeah.